Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. This week, we're going to have kind of a broader topic. One of the things that had come up in conversation with somebody this last week was the issue of distilling alcohol. And Amy, you know that I'm not the best versed person on alcohol. I've actually never even had a drink in my life. But it came up in conversation because of a new product that was on the internet that we were talking about. It was called a survival still. And what this thing is it's a little metal disc that goes on top of a stock pot. And you put water in the stock pot and you boil it. And the water comes up, goes through the disc. It collects on the bottom of another pot you have sitting on top. The dew then falls down around the edges of the disc, gets collected, and then you have distilled water. And distilled water is on one hand, it's very pure because you've killed the bacteria and viruses. You're not getting most of the minerals are going to stay in the bottom. They're not going to rise up with it, although you could have some chemicals that are volatile that would be, you know, aerated when you heat up the water to boiling. But for the most part, you're getting rid of most of the impurities, you're killing the bacteria and viruses, and you're getting water that's usable for other things. Now, the downside with distilled water is that you're not getting any of the minerals. And so water being a very greedy little thing goes through your body looking for the minerals that it can pull out and collect to itself, because nature abhors a vacuum and the water is going to try to replenish what it's missing.
Yeah, that's my understanding, Doug, is that you don't necessarily want to drink distilled water continuously because you are missing some of those vital minerals. And, you know, and that's one of the things, too, because you and I were talking, we're not, you know, near the coast. And that's something that, you know, I would see that would be something that would be very, it'd be a great product for someone that's living out maybe out on the ocean and they have just that huge amount of seawater that they could distill. But, you know, out here, why would somebody use sort of to distill when they could use maybe a purifier like a Berkey that, you know, they carry over at TruPrep?
The only thing that came to my mind was the size of the unit. The distiller is just a flat disc. I mean, mm-hmm. It weighs almost nothing. It's very small, and it never has to be cleaned or replaced. And it's, from what I saw online, it'd be very hard to break it. I mean, you could throw this thing into a pack and run it over the truck, and it really wouldn't make much difference to it because it's just a metal disc. Mm. But the downside to it, obviously, is that you're getting water that's not the best for ingesting, and it takes a lot of energy to make it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you brought up salt water. Well, desalinization is incredibly expensive, and the reason is because it takes so much energy to make it. Here we're talking about using up fuel, whatever fuel
that's
it
true.
Is, yep. to heat up the water, to boil the water, to have part of the water be collected and cooled. So you're losing water all the time with it. You're not going to, if you start with a gallon, you're not going to end up with a gallon. Mm-hmm. So there's a loss of product, and there's also the use of the energy to get it to boil, and you're dissipating all that heat. Now, if you were able to use that heat at the same time, let's say like a power pot. Have you seen those things?
I have seen the power pots. Don't they carry those at TruPrep? Yes.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
And they have them underneath suggested retail price too, because they were able to get a really good deal on them. Mm. So they've got them in, and I know that they're trying to move those. So it's one of the products that they're going to be bringing up on their new sale list for their summer sale, which is coming up soon. But the idea behind the power pot is that you're using the heat to do something. You're melting ice or you're boiling water. You're doing something. Well, in conjunction with that, you can create electricity from the thermodynamics. So it harnesses some of that wasted energy to do something else with it. And I think with a still, you could get into kind of the same principle, that if you were cooking something on top of the pot that you were using to collect the water from underneath the pot that's boiling, kind of like a double boiler, then you would at least be recouping some of that lost energy. But I kind of digress. The idea is that why don't more people have stills? I mean, it's something useful. It's a way to clean water and do other things with, apparently. And that's something that came up with discussion for me. And I think that this is an interesting topic to present to our listeners, because there are a lot of things out there which we can do to prep, which kind of aren't kosher anymore, I guess you'd say. You know, the idea of making your own whiskey is illegal in the United States, but you can make your own beer and you can make your own wine.
Yes.
And all three of those alcoholic products have a variety of uses. And then getting away from like the hard alcohol aspect, there's also fermentation. You know, they're fermented pickles and all sorts of preservation through fermentation is another aspect of this entire family of topics.
Yeah, back up for just 1 second because I do have a question. You know, with your legal background, why in the world do you know why that we're allowed to make beer and wine but not hard alcohol? Why is it?
Originally, making any alcohol was illegal.
Right.
And then an exception was carved out for beer and wine. And the reason behind it is because beer and wine have a much lower alcohol content. Beer, there's 3-2 beer, and then there's beer that runs around 5-6% alcohol. Wine runs around 10-12% alcohol. Grain alcohols are somewhere between 30 and 50 proof, and then you can go all the way up to, say, Everclear, which is 180 proof. And
Everclear is one thing that I like to actually put away. And, you know, there's multiple uses for Everclear, which is really pretty awesome. And one of the things, I actually like to burn them in my little alcohol stoves.
The thing with Everclear is it's a very, very pure alcohol. 180 is pure alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually illegal in, I think, 14 states to sell real Everclear. Now, they make a step down. There's Everclear that's 151 proof, which is legal even in Florida and the states that have banned it. But to get the real pure alcohol, a lot of states still have that completely banned, no matter who makes it. And the idea is that, you know, with a lower alcohol content, it's much less likely that you're going to have health problems from it. At least that's the theory. So when you start to get into really high alcohol content that's not being regulated and you don't know the actual proof, somebody might think that they were drinking the equivalent of vodka, which is 70 or 80 proof, and then actually be drinking Everclear, which is 180 proof, and get blood poisoning from the alcohol. So by having it regulated and having it tested and administered and you know what you're buying, it supposedly makes it safer.
Well, I don't know if that makes a whole lot of sense to me, but
well, I mean, a lot, you know, of government regulation.
Exactly.
So we look at this as, you know, kind of a totality of the circumstances, and as you get into the uses of it, I mean, distilled alcohol has, like you said, has a lot more use than beer or wine. You can't take wine or beer and start a fire with it.
No, that's true.
Because the alcohol content is only 5%. So you've got 95% water. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, you like cartoons, they take and throw it on the fire and whoosh, it goes up. Beer won't do that. Mm-hmm. Wine won't do that. And wine is another, you know, wine has a lot of extra stuff in it besides just the liquids. You're dealing with lots of the fruit tannins and what makes it what it is. So there, it's I think it's a really interesting topic that we can get into. How to prepare with things like this, you know, things that people don't normally think of. You think of water and shelter and fire and a way to defend it, right? You know, some all these, you know, basics. But the ability to clean a wound, the ability to have fuel and barter. I mean, I may never have a drink, but I know most of the world does. And if they're willing to trade me something I need for something I don't need, what more can
you ask for? And that's the thing, too. I mean, I can imagine that if it were a time when there were not any dentists around and I had a abscess tooth that had to be yanked out of my head, I would be more than willing to chug back a couple cups of Everclear and just to knock that pain out of there. And
well, you know, this is an old West way, you know, you take a shot before you have your surgery and bite the bullet.
Absolutely, that's right.
And this, you know, the process of distillation is fairly straightforward. I mean, it's not like this is some grand secret or something that's going to take, you know, years to master. All you're doing is collecting vapor. The idea behind a still is that you collect the vapors and then have them condense in another area. So you're going to have heat. You're going to have something underneath heating it up. Then your liquid inside, whether it's water or an alcohol mash or anything else, as it heats up, it evaporates. The evaporation goes up, gets collected in a tube. The tube comes down, condensation, collects it again, and drips it into a cleaner, sterile container. And so it's not complicated. It's not hard to do. The aspects of it, making alcohol, are much more complicated than the aspects of distillation.
Well, that's one thing I've never actually personally done. I mean, I've never tried it. I think it would be very interesting. And it seems to me, I'll have to go back and look, but it seemed to me that there was maybe out in, maybe it was Dahlonega, or I think that they had just opened like a, like, so I guess it was sort of like a moonshine museum, or mm-hmm. do you know about that?
I know a little bit. I know that they have a moonshine festival in Dahlonega mm-hmm. every year, and it's huge. I mean, people go nuts for it. And this kind of ties back into the mythology of it. I mean, in the North Georgia mountains, you had the beginnings of bootlegging. And what happened was back in the 1930s when Prohibition was in effect, people did not give up their alcohol. And so this created not only an entire gangster era where people were running black markets and mm-hmm. trying to sell it, but you also had people who had to make it. And so they would make it out in the woods where there was little supervision and then truck it into the cities where people were trying to buy it. And you could make a killing. I mean, you could make an absolute killing because of black market prices. This also was the birth of NASCAR. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, NASCAR.
I'm not surprised.
Stock car racing. what happened is you would have a car that they would soup up to be able to outrun the police. And it had to be able to carry a heavy load in the back. So, I mean, it had to look like a normal car, but be a high-performance vehicle. And their races emerged and grew into NASCAR. I know we're coming up on a commercial break, folks. Stay with us. We're going to be right back. You're listening to News Talk 1160, The Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Doug and Amy, and we're talking bootlegging now. Yeah, when you hear banjos, paddle faster.
Right, yeah, my brother can play the banjo. He's pretty good.
When we left you, we were talking about NASCAR and how the cars of the bootleggers grew into races, actual dirt track races, and that grew into NASCAR. And the idea was is that your car had to be able to hold, you know, 100 gallons of refined grain alcohol in the trunk, which is heavy. And then you also had to be able to get up enough speed to outrun the cops who were after you. So these were very super, you know, charged cars.
I'm thinking Dukes of Hazzard here. It's running through my head.
Very, very much so. You should. But the flip side is the car couldn't stand out. It couldn't look like a hot rod mm-hmm. because then it would attract attention. So it was a stock car. And stock car racing became very popular, particularly in the Southeast. And it grew out of the Depression era Prohibition. And the real lesson we learned from Prohibition is that banning something that people want just doesn't work.
Right. Right. I mean, kind of like marijuana.
And which is an excellent point. And medical marijuana is having a comeback across the United States now. And the history of marijuana is another interesting legal history because it's a weed.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, it's a weed. And it has some historical medicinal value. It does get people a little loopy, but it's not anywhere near as addictive or as dangerous, I would argue, as alcohol is.
Yes,
alcohol is a traditional white Anglo-Saxon custom, whereas marijuana is not.
Right. That goes back to the American Indians, doesn't it? Isn't that what they had in the peace pipes or something along those lines?
In the North American Indians was more tobacco, but in the Mesoamerica, in Mexico and Central America, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I figured that's why they thought they were bears and eagles and stuff. I don't know.
Peyote, which was commonly used in the American Southwest, was used in religious experiments, shall we say?
I guess. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah,
I can dig
cool.
it, but...
you got it, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
I got the munchies.
We got to stop taking these commercial breaks. Just kidding. Kidding.
But yeah, no, the immigrants, Mexican immigrants who came up to work in the fields brought marijuana with them. And that was seen as being something that was not socially acceptable. So it was easy to get regulations and to have it banned. And that was kind of like the racial background to why marijuana is so looked down upon in society, whereas alcohol, which I think a very strong case can be made that alcohol is dangerous, is not. And it's because that it's very traditional. I mean, German beer, French wine, mm-hmm. British port, very common European custom to have alcohol with every meal, for it to be a part of daily society. And that goes back to the Middle Ages, where alcohol was used to purify water, because drinking water was so dangerous and putrid that you had to do something to kill the bacteria and viruses in it and to improve the flavor. So what would happen is you add an alcohol to your water in order to help cleanse and purify and make it palatable. And so alcohol was just a daily part of survival in the Middle Ages. And I could see, you know, in a true epic proportions disaster, alcohol becoming, filling that role again, where in order for you to know that the water's clean, you add a little alcohol to it, whether it be wine or port or beer or something, or mead. You know what mead is?
What is mead?
Mead is beer that, instead of using grain, is fermented honey.
Oh, yes, yes. That does ring. I mean, I think of mead and I think of the Renaissance Festival.
Huzzah! I have not yet been, but I am making big plans to go to the Renaissance Fair with some friends this year. And I'm told that one of my friends is making my wife a beautiful Renaissance Fair dress.
Oh, lovely.
With a matching dress for my daughter.
Oh,
so
sweet.
This is going to be a big deal, and
we need pictures.
Yeah, I'll be taking the pictures because I'm not wearing anything frilly. I'm not going to look like a reject from a Disney movie.
Oh my god! No tights for you.
No tights for Doug.
Okay, all right.
That's right.
I'm disappointed.
Are you?
I am. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not.
Okay.
So,
circling back around.
you know, mead and beer and wine are very traditional European staples, and I see that as being kind of the underpinnings. Now, when we got to Prohibition, you know, there had been a temperance movement since the mid-1800s. It followed the Second Great Awakening, which was a period in American history where evangelical Christian beliefs were rampant, and that you had itinerant preachers who would go around and have revival meetings, and people were very into this. I mean, it was in a small town where there isn't radio yet, there isn't television, there isn't movies, there isn't anything going on. You have your day-to-day existence. And then you have someone who's incredibly flamboyant come in and put up a tent and a stage and talk, and it's not controversial. I mean, it's religious. Everybody, you know, the church is the center of the town square. People go to church. It's considered a normal average thing to be. And then you have this flamboyant, exuberant preacher who's comes into town and puts on a show, and people are swept up in the moment of it. And this is the culture that is bringing about the temperance movement. And you see that after the Civil War all the way up until about 1920, a very strong temperance movement moving throughout the country. And as time went on, they were able to get enough political steam, usually because the temperance movement was largely run by women, and they were putting tremendous pressure on the politicians of their day to have this change made. And so it was a way to both placate a large section of the population and to have very little repercussion, because who's going to get up and argue that, well, you know, the devil's drink, I'm for the devil's drink, right? You know, mm-hmm. who's going to take that stance? It's kind of like immigration reform has become in the country today. You know, it's very popular to bash any kind of changes to immigration reform when our immigration reform system, our immigration system is broken. I mean, it's horribly broken. And I don't think anyone will look at it and say, this is the model system that the world should adopt.
Agreed.
But nobody wants to change anything because it's easier not to. You can placate mm-hmm. large sections of the population by just saying, well, I'm against amnesty. And I personally am against amnesty. I think that's a terrible idea. But it's a populist position you can take to set yourself apart and to safeguard your seat in the House or the Senate. And that's what temperance became back in the 19-teens and 20s. It was a very safe thing to say, I'm against alcohol. I'm against people beating their wives. I'm against, you know, kicking puppies. Woohoo. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an easy position to take. The problem is that when you have that culture set up, you end up with people who are still going to want it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't legislate what people want in or out. They're going to do it. And so this created the end of the Roaring Twenties when Prohibition came in. The backlash was the 30s, where you had gangs moving alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Elliot Ness going and smashing the barrels open, and the increase in fighting. This led to the 1934 National Firearms Act, because the gangsters were using Thompson submachine guns and the police felt outgunned, and they were, you know, Colt had just come out with the 38 Super in order to defeat body armor because the gangsters were wearing it. And then Smith & Wesson comes out with the 357 Magnum, which is another step up. There's an arms race between the police and the criminals, which I think is eerily familiar with today. Very much so. You see the small town. You don't see Andy Griffith anymore. You see police running around in black ninja outfits with M-wraps behind them. And
throwing stars. And
ability to kick down doors willy-nilly and throw stun grenades into babies' cribs. I mean, the world is getting to a point where we're having the same sort of arms race. Only then it was over alcohol, and now it's over drugs. And both of these fights are just as pointless because it what it does is it enables the people who are outside the law to profit, and it puts the government in a position where it's at war with its own people.
Right. But I mean, I couldn't see where methamphetamines would become legal. I mean, marijuana, yes, I could truly see that. But I mean, we're looking at two completely opposite ends of the spectrum.
Not necessarily. Why do people take methamphetamines? Because they can't get drugs which give them the same sort of high in a safer, more productive manner. They get hooked on it because it's easier to make than cocaine. You can't make cocaine with stuff you buy in a grocery store, but you can methamphetamine.
Yes.
So there's an avenue for people to get into the market. People who want to make money selling drugs, it's impossible for them to become coke manufacturers, but it's very possible for them to become meth dealers. And then they start to get people hooked on it because it's more available. The more available it is, it brings down the price. When it's cheaper than the higher priced stuff, the market follows the prices. And even though it's bad for you, horribly bad for you, and destroys your body, it's still giving you a high, and it's still cheaper and more available. And that's why people use meth. It's not because it's a drug of choice. And if you've noticed, now that more and more people realize how bad it is for them, even the people who are, shall we say, strung out on drugs, they realize how bad this stuff is. You see a shift in the market. Now people are going back to opiates because opiates have a very similar response to your body, and they're safer.
So do you?
I think if you legalized narcotics and regulated it, if you made it taxed, if you made it regulated, if you had people that they didn't have to buy it off a street corner, the people who are going to do it anyway are now going to pay the taxes just like cigarettes. I mean, think about cigarettes. Who pays $20 in taxes for 30 cents worth of tobacco?
Yeah.
People who are addicted to it, yes. But do we bat an eye about that? Do we go, oh my goodness, what are we doing? No, it's common course. The government regulates it. We don't think about it. We give sin taxes and call it a day. Well, if we did the same thing with opiates, yes, there are going to be people who abuse it just like there are people who abuse cigarettes. There's the chain smokers who can't stop for anything. And yes, it's going to negatively impact their lives, but isn't it their choice to see how they want to live their life or ruin it as they see fit?
I don't know. I guess I've never really thought of it from this standpoint because I feel like I'm sort of teeter-tottering on the edge of where I feel like I'm going with this, because I've always had the stance that I thought that marijuana should be legal, but I've never even really given it a second thought to think that any other drugs could be legal. Only because, I mean, heck, all you have to do is watch Discovery and see how these people turn into walking zombies. Well, and it destroys lives.
Yes and no, depending on the drug. Some drugs do have that effect. I mean, there are some drugs that are so super powerful that they can do that to a person. But there are other drugs that simply knock you out or give you a high or a low, depending on whether it's a depressant or a stimulant.
Right, but then we go back to the whole addiction, where you can't just put it down. It's nearly impossible, and people are doing anything that they possibly can, to get this. I mean, look at our prescription drugs. I mean, we have prescription drugs that are regulated, yet people are still out on the street corners and they're selling them illegally. Because I mean, even through regulation.
That's because it's regulated, but it's still illegal. I mean, it's regulated so that certain people can have it, but it's not open enough that...
Yeah, but I mean, but look at what would happen if it were over the counter where you could just get whatever you wanted.
It still creates a black market, though. That's why they're on the street corner. Mm-hmm. If they could go into a grocery store and buy it, they would. Now, the only time that it gets skewed is when the prices are out of line, because that impacts the free market. I think we're coming up on another commercial break.
Yes, we are.
You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back. Doug and I were just having a little conversation over the commercial break, and it turned into a knockdown dragout, and he walked away, I think, with a bloody lip. But no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. You know, we're talking about drugs and actually, you know, having them on the free market, and I don't know. I can't see it happening. I mean, I can see it with marijuana, and especially looking into, you know, medicinal marijuana. And but I truly just don't believe. Primarily because with the addiction and just how it absolutely ruins families. I mean, you know, some of the radio shows that we've talked about in the past, and we've really focused in on how the family is a unit, and you know, we really talk about, you know, how love is the cornerstone and this sort of thing. But when you're going to these drugs that completely change your mindset, it changes who you are. And I don't know. I almost feel like if it were to become legal, I think everybody and their brother would run on out and say, you know what, maybe it's not so bad after all. We should just try this.
You know, there's some validity to that point, that it by taking away the illegality, that you're endorsing it. But we do a lot of there are a lot of things in this society that we allow people to do that are not good for them. And if you follow the logic of, well, people are addicted to it and they're going to make the wrong choice, therefore we need to ban it, why do we allow people to eat fast food? Why do we allow them to buy 32-ounce soft drinks full of sugar? Why do we allow them to sit at home in the evenings and watch TV and not have a regimented exercise program, particularly if we're going to be paying for their health care from now on? Why do we allow them to make any of these choices? Well, you know, it's a choice. It's a lifestyle choice on how you want to live your life. And in the end, you're going to have to make a decision whether you are authoritarian or libertarian, whether you believe in telling people what to do or whether you believe in letting people make their own choice,
but
even if it's a wrong choice.
Isn't there a happy medium, though? I mean, there seems to be. I don't think it has to be one or the other. I think, you know, there. I think you can have a happy medium. Now, I am all about. I mean, I do not like micromanagement, which I think that our country is kind of turning towards. And I mean, you can't have Big Brother, you know, breathing down your neck and absolutely everything that you do. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, you know, raising children. I mean, with children, it's very important. You know, you have your helicopter moms out there who are just straight over their children, and they don't want them to fall down and bump their knee. But you know what? It's good for the kids to fall down and bump their knee.
I'm not a child of my state. I'm an adult. I'm a reasoning person, and I can make my own choices on what's the way I want to live my life.
And therefore, fast food is still legal.
Right. Well, you know, that's kind of the crux. You say, well, but it's addictive. Well, alcohol is addictive. There are people who are raging alcoholics who cannot control themselves, yet we don't ban alcohol. Actually, well, we do.
Yeah, but what percentage of people who drink alcohol become alcoholics versus what percentage of people who take, you know, certain drugs that become addicted to drugs?
Well, I think you look at it kind of in a skewed way, because if you look at people who are taking illegal drugs illegally,
yes.
That's a different subset rather than the entirety of the nation. How many people are prescribed a narcotic from a hospital or a doctor for a valid purpose and then become addicted mm-hmm. to it? That should be our subset. If you look at it that way, I bet the percentage is incredibly small, because they are not looking for – they don't have the addictive personality. The addictive personalities are the people who are out there who need to buy it on the street corner because they need it. And that changes things. Now,
so you think people that are on meth are just the people that have addictive personalities initially?
I think that they took meth in the beginning looking for something that they could not find in their lives. They were trying to self-medicate for something going on, and that they were addicted to that. Now, yeah, I think that if you take average person out there who is financially secure, who's got their preps in order, who has a stable family structure, they don't take meth. Not the first time, not any time. Now, maybe it's highly addictive like crack cocaine, where the first time you take it, you become addicted to it. But what makes you take it the first time? What makes you go to a street corner and buy a drug off some sleazy-looking guy with a pit bull sitting next to him? I mean, what causes a person to do that?
Right. Well, obviously, I mean, it has to do with you know, personal circumstances and just, you know, there's a lot of abuse out there. But not only that, there are a lot of mental disorders that go you know, unchecked.
Mm-hmm.
And people self-medicate because when they have something that they can't get, you know, get on top of, I mean, you have a lot of people that are homeless and who do turn to drugs just to stop the you know, the voices in their heads.
I agree. I agree completely. So how does that impact whether or not drugs should be legalized?
Well, but here's the thing, too. I don't think it's because of that, that say meth. I mean, we could just kind of keep going back to that particular drug. Of course, there are other ones out there. But when you do take these particular drugs, they change the chemicals in your brain, mm-hmm. and in your head. And and then you have withdrawals, and therefore you go straight back to that drug.
Yeah, there's mental addiction, and then there's chemical addiction.
I think there's a huge chemical addiction. Well, and that's my, I think, my soapbox, is that the chemical addiction, I truly believe, whether you're, Joe Blow out on the street corner who, you know, just like the good old country song, lost his dog, lost his wife, whatever, you know, your favorite song. But
yeah, you know what happens when you play a country song backwards?
Oh, Lord, what?
You know, the old joke back in the 60s and 70s, if you played Beatles music backwards, you get, you know, hidden messages.
Right. Uh-huh.
If you play a country song backwards, you get your dog back, you get your wife back, you get your truck back.
Good point. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think, yeah, I truly believe that just with the whole chemical addiction, I think it's going to be the same for the guy on the street. And, I mean, it's not uncommon to have, you know, the businessmen, you know, the successful businessmen to get strung out on drugs and lose their business and their family. And it has happened.
And it happens with alcohol. So why don't we ban alcohol?
But what percentage?
I don't know.
I think there's a big difference in percentage there.
But I do know that there are still areas where we have banned alcohol. Did you know that that still happens in the United States, that there are areas that are dry?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm familiar with, like, different, of course, like, for the longest time, you couldn't buy alcohol on Sundays, you know, here, obviously, yes. That has changed. Whoop, whoop. hey, I like my red wine. It doesn't make any sense, though, because you could go to a restaurant and drink and drive home, mm-hmm. But you couldn't go and buy it and take it home, so.
Up in Alaska, there are areas, they're called local option communities, where they've completely banned the possession of alcohol. So you can't have it at all. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because it's such a rampant social problem. The drinking leads to child abuse, leads to assaults and batteries, leads to rapes, leads to all sorts of societal ills. And they've made a hard line in the sand and just said, the only way that we can deal with this is that we don't have it in our community at all. And the flip side of that is it creates a black market. You can take a $12 bottle of R&R whiskey and run it out to Togiak and sell it for $350 cash. Mm. Every day of the week and mm-hmm. twice on Sunday. No problem. But, you know, that's the trade-off. You're trading off the widespread use of it for a much higher profit margin and people who are willing to still be bootleggers and run it. And that's the what's happened with the war on drugs. We have bootleggers. We have people who are out there producing it for a market because they know that because it's illegal, they can get 40 times what it's worth.
Yeah, and that's never going to change.
Right. I mean, that's human nature. But you can take out the illegality, drop the value of it, regulate it, and watch people who are using it.
Yeah, you could. But, you know, if we kind of go back to the scenario of the child, you know, when you don't want to be the helicopter mom. And this is where I don't think it's either or. I think it's we have to kind of pick our battles. Because with that child, I think they need to be let go and run and play and fall down and scrape their knee. But if that child is running towards, you know, the interstate, I'm going to stop them. And I think with something like this, I think we really need to pick our battles. And I think we there are certain things I think we need to take our, you know, thumb and put our thumb down on it to stop it. Other things we need to say, hey, you know what? Be careful. Don't be stupid. And I think that goes with everything because we don't want to live in a country where everything is regulated. And, you know, it seems like we keep moving more and more towards that. And I'm totally against it. But
well, you say we don't. And you may be right when you're talking about you and me and our listeners. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that's true anymore. I think that this country is crying out to be regulated.
Out to be led, I think. Not regulated. I think we're crying out to be led the correct way because our leadership is not what it used to be.
I understand, you know, kind of the fine difference there, but the practicality is that people want to be told what to do. I mean, whether it's real leadership or not, in the end, people are crying out to say, stop me before I kill again.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, you guys, stick around with us. I'm going to battle this out with Doug here in just a few seconds. We'll come back and I'll let you know who wins. You're listening to Doug and Amy on Ready Radio, News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. We're coming into our last segment, and we appreciate you being with us for our show today as we talked a little bit about alcohol and legalities of various drugs. I mean, I know that that seems like a tangential proposition to what we started off with, a still and with moonshine, but really, I mean, drug use today is the modern moonshine, and I think that one of the ways that this relates to being prepared for an emergency or being just a more full person as Jefferson. Jefferson made his own wine. He was very big into wine. I mean, wine was his thing, and there was nothing like French wine for Thomas Jefferson. Mm-hmm. But he made his own wine at Monticello, and it was an important thing for him. And I think that it should be an important thing for everybody to, you know, make their own of what they enjoy. For me, it's bread, but for other people, learn how to make beer, learn how to make wine, learn how to do it yourself, learn how to be a fuller person.
Yeah, and there's certain things that are in this area. Like I know that my father-in-law, I believe he did the muscadine wine. Mm. And there are all kind of different fruits that you can make wine from. And let me tell you, that would be my happy place if I could have an orchard and just make some wine. It seems like there are some wineries out here in Georgia.
There are quite a few,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
North Georgia has a very decent, not as good as California or southern France, but it has a decent climate for grapes. Mm-hmm. And like you said, muscadines and scuppernong are the only grape species that are indigenous to North America. They're both native to Georgia, and they are a fantastic fruit. I love scuppernong jelly. I think that it's amazing. And the neat thing about scuppernong, and I was originally looking at a house that had a scuppernong vineyard on it, but they have a much thicker skin than a normal grape does. So they have a lot of tannins, and they're very healthy and very good.
I've never had those. I mean, I've had the muscadines, but I've never had it. What is it, scuppernog?
Scuppernog.
Nog. Scuppernog. Okay.
Yeah, like eggnog.
Gotcha. How is that similar? Is it similar to the muscadine or to the grape?
They're more like a Chardonnay grape. They're white. Uh-huh. and they have a more fruity flavor than the muscadines do. Mm-hmm. They're very good. And they're very healthy for you. And I think that they're really cool. They're very seedy. There are no seedless muscadines, mm-hmm, or scuppernogs, right. But they're fantastic for making things. And I've had some jellies that were just incredible. Mm. And if you go up to Ellijay, which is just north of Jasper, they have some vineyards up there that are connected to the apple orchards.
Mm-hmm.
So year-round, they have available different jellies, and the one that my kids enjoyed most was a slush. They had a slushy made out of muscadine juice. Mm. And so, you know, kind of dark, and it was very fruity and just, mm-hmm, delicious. We all enjoyed
that. They're
very
sweet.
Very,
yes,
sweet.
Yeah.
High fructose content, yeah, in those sours.
You know, I'm going to have to see if I can find some wine. Because I would, oh gosh, I have a list that's a mile long of things that I want to do. You know, it's all about, you know, time and money, right?
Yeah.
You have either one or the other, but not both. Isn't it always the way?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, if I had the time, that's definitely something I would love to get into.
Well,
making my own wine.
Well, speaking of time and money, I think it's time that we discuss a little bit about the True Prep product of the week.
Dun, dun, dun.
And this week, the True Prep is proud to announce that they are a dealer of the Life Straw. Now, do you know what Life Straw is, Amy?
I do.
Okay.
Know what Life Straw is.
What is a Life Straw?
It's a water purification in a nutshell. But yeah, basically, you take this, it looks like a very big, thick straw. Most preppers that are out there know it because they're heavily marketed. They are pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what you do is you can, if there was a stream or lake or something like that, water that you wouldn't typically just pick up and drink, you could use your Life Straw and drink straight through it, and it would purify your water.
And it's supposed to purify around 260 gallons of water or 1,000 liters before you need to replace it. The way it works is through microfiltration. The idea is that it's made up of thousands of tiny little straws that are all 2.2 microns across. And when you suck on it, it sucks up the water and nothing else that's bigger than 0.2 microns. The packaging lists that it removes bacteria and pathogens.
Yeah, and they also have here's another thing, Doug. I think one of the drawbacks of having a Life Straw, first of all, is you need a container to drink from, or you're going to be on your hands and knees with that Life Straw with your face, you know, in the mud.
Like Gideon. Do you know that story? Gideon had to get rid of some of his men who had volunteered for the army, so all the ones that got down lapped like,
yep,
a dog,
exactly,
he kicked out, and all the ones that scooped up with their hands,
yes,
those were the ones he kept.
Yeah, I wonder if they had Life Straws.
I bet they did not.
I don't think they did. Well, Life Straw also came out with this container that you can put the life straw down in, and that way you could actually scoop up your lake water and stand up like a human being or sit down, and the life straw goes inside and you can drink it straight from there.
What an ingenious concept.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
I am really impressed with these things. You're looking at a grand total of $20 for the original life straw. And the improved life straw with a bottle runs about $35.
$35, yes.
I mean, that's a fantastic value for something light and portable, perfect for a bug out bag. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with life straw, you can get away with sucking less. So
that's
there you
right.
go.
Hey, you can save your life.
There you go.
There you go. Perfect. Awesome.
So that's the fantastic products that True Prep is bringing in. We really appreciate our sponsors, folks. And I would encourage you to stop into their Marietta store. Take a look at the renovations. They've opened up a brand new wing for Kudzu Tactical, where all of the gun stuff is that you're going to need, all of your firearms and accessories and ammunition is down in the Kudzu Tactical wing. True Prep has opened up even more square footage for new products that are going to be arriving any day now. And we encourage you to stop by. And also, you can sign up on their webpage for their email list, or you come to our webpage and get on our email list. We have a wonderful website that was put up by iTech Atlanta. It's at readyradio.net. And on that website, you can listen to old shows, or you can leave us comment or feedback. Send us an email at info@readyradio.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and our shows are also on iTunes for you people who are using Apple products.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of double back and tell you, Doug, that when I walked into True Prep, I almost didn't recognize it because they did. Not only have they acquired that space directly to the right of them where they've moved all of their firearms and firearm accessories, but they have painted. And let me tell you, it is bright. It is nice. It is well lit.
They covered over the dank beige?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, what color is it now?
It's this, I don't know. The way I kind of looked at it was it was white with sort of like a greenish tint to it, maybe.
Well, very cool. Yeah. I know that their mascot, Preppy the Turtle, is green and brown. So that probably fits in with their logo and their branding.
It looks nice.
I'm really proud at all the work that they're doing there. The staff there is so wonderful. You talk to Jimmy or you talk to Mark, and you know that these are good people who are trying real hard to help everybody get what they need. So please, folks, stop in. Talk to our sponsors at True Prep. We appreciate you listening in this week. We're very proud to be able to come and talk about issues like medical marijuana, like, you know, the problems with prohibition and drug use. But this show is about a lot more than just, you know, the here and now. This show is about the future. I mean, we've had episodes in the past about family values and about traditions. I mean, our Thanksgiving Day show is one of the ones that stands out in my mind as something that really is a touchstone of what makes Ready Radio Ready Radio. And it's not just about buying some stuff and saying you're ready, or it's not just about taking a class and saying you're ready. It's about embracing a lifestyle that is full of love and compassion, that brings people together, that makes sure that you are not dependent on anybody else.
Right. It really is a mindset, for sure. And that's the thing. I mean, there are so many aspects. And the thing is, too, you know, I know that there's also something out there like prepper panic, that some people, whenever they do get into emergency preparedness, I mean, all it takes is an afternoon on YouTube and you know, or some of the TV shows that are out there, and it'll scare you to death.
Every time I see those cat videos, I freak out. I'm telling you, that afternoon on YouTube is a dangerous thing.
Not that you're looking at the wrong videos.
I imagine there's some more comforting videos out there, but my goodness, have you seen how many cat videos there are?
I don't know. No.
I mean, what is wrong with these people? Seriously.
People have too much time on their hands, I think. I don't know. The ones that are looking for the jobs out there. They have to do something, I guess.
Wow. Well, folks, it's been a good show and a good week this week. We appreciate you listening in. Do check out our website, check out our sponsors. Be ready next week. We're going to be back at the same time and on the same station with a new topic about how to be prepared, be ready for whatever comes next, how to make yourself a more full and complete person, and how to enjoy life to the fullest. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com or visit a True Prep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.